Welcome to Hermaphobia 26. I'm Alan.
I'm Mark.
And I'm Russ.
And we're here to finish talking up the science fiction films of the last 40 years.
40 years? Wow, that's almost as old as me. Yeah, I am 40.
Yeah, if it was 10 years younger. Does that work right?
Shut up. You're older than I am.
I'm not. I'm like 2 years younger now. Now, next year will be like 4 years. I haven't quite figured the math out on that yet. Yeah. Anyhow, we're going to continue looking at the science fiction films of these years. Talk about some of our favorites, some of the ones we thought were a little ignored, and some that we think got a little bit too much attention.
Alrighty.
So let's do it.
Listen up.
Maybe we can sort of take a look at the decades, maybe look at some science fiction from the 70s. For the first standalone film of the 70s, I've picked Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Steven Spielberg's classic. Come on, you gotta give it that. It does... It kind of gave us yet another vision version of aliens and stuff like that. I think probably to that point the best aliens landing on Earth kind of movie that we'd seen, like the whole flying saucer aspect.
Plus, who can do the?
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
John Williams took up to I believe 3 to 4 months just to find that five notes. Tone yeah. or notes sound. And they did so many combinations, they worked out that there could be millions and millions of combinations of five tones, and they did a lot of them until they found one that caught their ear. There's a documentary on the special edition Close Encounters that talks about this and many other amazing facts. So,
yeah, I remember seeing it in the theater, and just being amazed, and. I think what really got me was the when all the people are being released from the ship at the very end, and those like fighter pilots come out, and they were from like World War II era. They got lost in the Bermuda Triangle. I had just read a book about those guys like about a month before that, so I was like, wow, that's cool.
And for such a tabloid. Topic like alien abduction, it's amazing that we haven't seen more films about it. You know, like I can think of this one and Communion that you would say are straight
fire in the sky.
True enough, yeah. But I mean, there aren't that many of them. To be fair, the ones that have been made, I think, are pretty good. I like Communion. I like Fire in the Sky. Mm-hmm. Next is to you, there.
Okay, my first movie from. The 70s would be Sleeper. I thought it was a brilliant movie. It was Woody Allen, of course, but I thought his interpretation of the future, sort of cliche or stereotypical of the time, in terms of what the future was going to be envisioned by somebody living in the early 70s, I thought it overall it had a lot of great gags in it and such.
Yeah, this was the premise of it though was he had what gone into like a chamber or something like that.
200 years suspended animation.
Yeah, because it's been a long time since I've seen it.
I still haven't seen it. I'm waiting for it to come around on the on the calendar.
Great movie though. Some of the gags are still. Hilarious. There's a machine called the Orgasmatron in it.
It's kind of Barbarella-esque.
Yeah, but they treat it really well. Some of the gags. There's a robot dog named I believe Rags, and that had some good scenes as well. I don't know. It's just like I said, a lot of the style and substance of the movie was is very dated now. I mean, everybody at that time in the early 70s, if you watch any movie in the early 70s, everybody's rank and such is signified by their turtleneck. And everybody wanders around huge airport sets and, literally, they were shot in airports, except for Logan's Run, which was shot in a mall. But it's large, airy, very
sanitary.
There's always this disembodied paging service that would tell everybody which direction to walk or where they're headed to.
That is sort of a sci-fi staple, isn't it?
Yeah, it went up until the, Logan's Run and Rollerball. But I'm going too far ahead here, so I'll let That's it go cool. to Mark.
Alrighty, my first from the 70s is The Andromeda Strain, based on the Myers Michael Crichton novel. Something falls from space, and this whole town dies except for this one old man and this one baby. And yeah, it's just creepy the way everything, everybody just sort of died immediately. In between steps. Just taking a sip of coffee and they're dead. Yeah.
So is it I haven't seen it too. Does it leave are the bodies still there or?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, there was one. There was one body that was stuck on a stairway, still standing up. Like they just died on a stair.
They're just asleep, like they were in Village of the Damned or. That episode of the $6 Million Man.
Okay, Village of the Damned. That movie was so bad and so toothless. I called it Village of the Darned.
It's John Carpenter. I will not have you besmirching the man's name.
Yeah. Anyways, but Andromeda Strain. Both this version and then the newer one that just happened a little while ago, the TV one. Very well done.
Who did the original?
Robert Wise directed it.
Yeah.
Actually.
Yeah. My next one is the Invasions of the Body Snatchers, the Philip Kaufman adaptation with Donald Sutherland, Brooke Adams, Leonard Nimoy, mm-hmm. What's her nut from Alien, Nancy Cartwright. I think this is the definitive version of the story.
I would have to agree with you. It was so creepy.
Yeah. It's so well done. I think everybody knows that, that scream that, the point, everybody at some point points their finger and makes the noise kind of thing, right? It's sort of become part of the pop culture. An early performance by Jeff Goldblum in there as well.
Mm-hmm.
Cool movie.
Yep. See, I'm going to go on to Logan's Run. Thought it was I don't think it held up. Special effects were god awful, and
so on mine too. I crossed it off to make room for
Body Snatchers. Oh, it wasn't.
I was going to put Logan's Run on mine too, because I enjoyed it at the time.
It was filmed in a mall in Dallas. It was at the time one of the largest malls, and. It's unfortunately not around anymore. It's not like the Monroeville Mall where you can still visit for to see all where they filmed Dawn of the Dead. But this mall was quite impressive, and I liked some of the effects held out. There was Roscoe Lee Brown as Box. It was quite an interesting little robot, and. Mm-hmm.
Farrah Fawcett.
A lot of matte paintings, yes. Oh, yeah. Farrah Fawcett, and the story was well done. It in fact was when I saw it, I was quite shocked that everybody would be their life would be over at the age of 30. In the book, it's actually 21.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
I think I actually read the book before I saw Logan's Run, so.
I think this too is sort of an example of where you have this utopian future that's mm-hmm. not what it appears to be.
Yeah. In order to stop overpopulation, that's what they've done.
Yeah,
to be able to like use their limited resources.
But that whole sort of, you know, that utopian future, that's not what it appears. You see that pop up again and again, like even more recently, The Island.
Crazy. Yeah. Anyway, my next one up is Superman, the movie. 1978. The opening farm scenes were shot in like Blackie, Alberta.
Yeah.
And I've actually been to the farmhouse. Actually, I have a piece of the farmhouse of the actual window where Martha Kent is looking out of and watches Jonathan Kent have the best filmed heart attack on any movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's an amazing film.
Richard Donner directed
it
and
I think that it still holds up. I mean, some of the flying stuff is a little bit on the, you know, janky side now, but back then, man, like it was just amazing, the helicopter scene, the Fortress of Solitude, the destruction of Krypton, and Christopher Reeve. I mean, the Superman franchise owes so much to that man, because I mean, he was Superman. Unfortunately, it haunted him beyond, you know, just these films. But he embodied all of the traits that is supposed to be Superman. Margot Kidder was a great Lois Lane, especially compared to that toothless fucking Kate Beckinsale that they had.
Kate Bosworth.
Kate Bosworth, yeah.
And Perry White.
Oh yeah, Jackie Cooper.
Jackie Cooper
was a great choice.
Yeah, Glenn Ford is Papa Kent there. Valerie Perron, she was fucking awesome. As was Ned Beatty as Otis.
Yeah, and Gene Hackman as Lex Luthor.
Yeah,
such good casting.
Great writing. For its time, state of the art special effects.
Yeah.
I can't say enough good stuff about it. I still love it to this day. Like I'll sit down and watch it anytime.
Alrighty.
Me?
Yep.
My next is A Boy and His Dog. Have you ever seen?
It is not ringing a bell right now.
It's a really cool movie. It's a post-apocalyptic story about a boy and his dog. The dog can actually talk. It's voiced by Jason Robards. The boy is played by Don Johnson.
Don Johnson, yeah.
Yeah. Really? And they have a few series of misadventures in the beginning, and then they find themselves in what appears to be the ideal situation where it's sort of just him and tons of babes. And again, you have that utopian, not what it seems to be thing happening, and things are a little bit more sinister underneath than they appear. It's a really cool movie. It is, it's funny. Like, it's got a really, really great dark sense of humor and, a really interesting take on the future. You've seen it?
Yes, I saw it. I can't remember a lot about it other than it took a lot of it took place underground.
Yeah, that's where the babes were.
Yeah. And a lot of films fell back on that. And I thought the story was really well done, and I got tired after a while of these underground movies. Logan's Run, even though it appeared to be under domes, it felt like it was underground. And it was a cost-cutting measure, too, so you don't have to do a skyline that's all futuristic. It was hard at the time. Mm-hmm. So a lot of times it did feel... when you think of science fiction, you don't think of being isolated or in a little in claustrophobic settings. However, a lot of movies at the time came out that way.
Well, they used the whole, what you said, like claustrophobic settings for, say, Alien 3.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That was another...
But that was more about an individual, not a whole society.
Yeah.
Right. So
but the cool thing, too, was the talking dog. Like, and he was smarter than the guy was. Like, that was the hilarious part. Like, he was sort of... the roles were kind of reversed, where there was sort of the dog leading him around, because he really wasn't quite smart enough to manage on his own.
Well, the plot, as it's listed on IMDb, says, a post-apocalyptic tale based on a novella by Harlan Ellison. A boy communicates telepathically with his dog as they scavenge for food and sex.
Yeah. All right.
How do I go after that? well, I had trouble finding a third one. It's not my favorite decade. A lot of the ones I did talk about, I guess we can talk about. Fantastic Planet. It was something back in 73. Real departure from anything we'd ever see in a science fiction movie. I think the people that wrote and created that movie were quite literally on another planet when they thought of it. And
this is the animated one, right?
Yes. Yeah. It was made in France.
The drug induced vision of the director. Holy smokes! I tried to watch that.
A lot of nudity in it too, and brings back fond memories because City TV used to play it a lot, and it used to get by the censors for some reason because probably it was hand drawn or what have you. But for a 12-year-old, that was great. It was like the hardcore porn.
I recall seeing it too when I was a kid. While seeing some of it, because I couldn't make it through it, it creeped me the fuck out. It's weird, like cubed, like it's. I was unable to follow the storyline, and it just creeped me out.
Yeah, I remember watching it too as a kid, and also enjoying all the nudity in it.
Right,
but I tried to watch it again recently. I found where it's actually being hosted online by this one site.
Oh, it's on archive.com, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so. Oh. Well, one of them like that, and it's nearly unwatchable now because
I can't watch it because it's I flinch in a lot of scenes. There's a scene where a giant who's been stomping on people's toys around with a newborn baby in the palm of its hand, prodding it and such. And it's quite scary, even though it's animated. you're really quite unnerved by this image that this huge destructive creature can play around with something so frail as a newborn baby. I think that's in the movie. Maybe it was just me. But I'll have to check it out now.
Alrighty, my last one for the 70s is Mad Max, the start of the Mad Max
series.
Quite easily the least of all of them. It was rather boring, I found, but still, it introduced us to Mad Max. Like, well, Max wasn't mad at the time because he still had his wife and kid. This one here actually shows why he's off wandering in the other ones.
They don't really explain, though, where he is, though. Is it science fiction, or is it just some...
It's a post-apocalyptic future.
They don't really they don't really imply that in the movie, do they?
I know
they just sort of say society's has gone
broken
down a bit.
Mm. It's a dystopian future movie again.
Yeah,
and like biker gangs are running the roads and.
So it was, the original Mad Max I couldn't get into. It was, I don't know. I think the accents are so thick in it, and it's so steeped in action, and action's not really my favorite genre. Road Warrior was better, but I have to admit my favorite's Beyond Thunderdome.
I agree.
I really like Thunderdome. Yeah. Romper Stomper.
You can't tell. Not even Mom.
Why not?
Because grown-ups can't see them. Only little kids can see them.
Give me a break.
Well, do you know what's going to happen if you do that? have to. Promise?
Yes.
You promise?
Okay, let's bounce ahead into the 80s, and my first pick is E.T. the Extraterrestrial.
Okay.
I saw this movie 6 times in a theater, and I cried like a bitch every time. I think of probably any sci-fi film, it is probably the most engaging on a human level. I think that it's universal. Its story is universal. You know, the fish out of water, the loneliness of the kid, the... You know, when it was happening too, this was a 1982 film, sort of where, you know, divorce rates and stuff like that are going through the roof. And you saw the breakdown of the family as well. And that sort of reaching out for some sort of healing.
Yeah.
Spielberg again. I think this was one of his peaks.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree. Like I watched it in theater when I was a kid. This is going to sound strange, but I've only ever seen it once. Okay. In its entirety.
You're sick, dude.
Yeah. And it was when I was a kid, and I went to go see it in the theater, and I laughed when I needed to laugh, and it brought me. It's like it turned a switch on me, and I started bawling. It's like, no. He can't be dead.
Oh yeah, you cry the sad tears, you cry the happy tears. I mean, it is. It's very emotionally manipulative.
It was the very first movie that ever did that to me.
Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, those Church of Latter-day Saints commercials—they used to do it for.
Oh, the Hallmark commercials. For it's like the daughter's going home, and she has the little present with the cell phone in it, and her dad calls, and I'm like, oh my god. Anyways, let's move along.
All right.
My first movie for the 80s is Tron.
A classic. Oh. And, I am looking forward to the sequel.
Tron.
I think if you were a boy of a certain age, Tron... It became your world in a way, like, you know, you wanted to go inside
of the matrix cycle.
There. You wanted, exactly.
Yeah.
Like, remember the table games with the light cycles and stuff?
Yep.
Oh, you would spend your allowance on that fucking thing. Like,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
When I finished high school and I was going to college for computer repair, on the very first day, we had like about 10 students in our class. Like, it was a very small little, like, it was like community, not a community college, like a school of business kind of dealing. We had 10 kids in our class, and the teacher showed that on our first day. The second day, there were 3 of us. I don't know what the other 7 were thinking. It's like, well, shit, I'm never going to be able to do that, and left, but. I still love the movie.
See what I mean?
And I went downstairs to the shortstop convenience store and bought some Doritos.
It's not a very good flowing movie. Like, it doesn't flow very well.
No.
There's no real there's no real arch enemy or any sort of payoff at the end of the movie, really, other than getting sucked in the video game, which that gimmick in itself was very alluring to a certain age range at the time, and the fact that we'd go to the arcades, hang out at the arcades a lot at that age, and you'd see Tron there, the video game, and here it is marketed exactly the same in the movie, and you want it to be part of that.
Yeah.
The whole experience. It was one of the first interactive experiences that crossed over mediums.
True, true.
I loved it. My first one from the 80s is The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai and Across the Eighth Dimension.
Is that the one with Molly Ringwald?
No, Peter Weller, John Lithgow, Alan Barkin, Jeff Goldblum, Christopher Lloyd.
I'm thinking of
Hey, Clancy Brown's in this too, man.
Yeah. I tried watching this one and I couldn't get into it.
Yeah. I'm the same.
Really? I watched it like 3-4 times. I thought it was so fun.
At the time we were talking about how movies travel from theater to theater, and I was reading a lot of American magazines by then, monster magazines, sci-fi magazines, and I kept hearing about Buckaroo Banzai and how great how amazing it sounded, and I kept following it, and it never came out in the theater up in North America. I think it was in one theater in all of I lived near Toronto at the time, and there's one at the Eaton Center in Toronto. It was playing in the Megaplex there, out of that huge city. So it was impossible to get to. I had to wait till video a few years later in '86 or '87 to see it. And by then, I was so hyped up for it. It's sort of like the Phantom Menace. We keep following it online and such. I was following that movie for so many, and I think it was delayed too. The release of Buckaroo Banzai,
and it just didn't live up to the hype.
It was very plodded along, and the effects weren't that great.
Whereas I was completely opposite. I went into watching it cold. I knew nothing about it. My sister brought it home from the video store where she worked. And she said, "You got to watch this." And I did. And I was like, "I love this."
It'd be better going in cold. Your expectations can really kill a movie.
But yeah, I liked a lot of the actors in it, and it was so stylized. Wasn't it based on a Japanese comic or something like that?
I had the book. There was actually a novelization. I thought it was based on a short story from a well-known science fiction author. But I don't think it was based on any sort of Japanese anime or comics.
Oh, I think it's manga. A comic book in the movie. It's like Buckaroo Banzai is a rock star, brain surgeon, comic book hero, samurai, who along with his group, the Hong Kong Cavaliers, must stop evil. Yeah, it's fun stuff.
So they were infusing a lot of the Japanese sort of culture into the movie, but it was a lot like Blade Runner at the time. And the early 80s movies have that infusion.
Okay.
W.D. Richer wrote it. Sorry. I believe he was the author of it.
Actually, he directed it.
Oh.
The writer was Earl McRock.
Original writers, Earl McRock and W.D. Richer. Because I remember the novel had his name on. I don't remember this first guy, but okay. Getting too far. Too much into Buckaroo Banzai.
The next one is Flash Gordon. Dino De Laurentiis presentation. We actually just watched it again last night.
Yeah.
He saw it for the first time last night.
Last night.
I mean, it's total camp. It's done that way. But it is so much fucking fun. And visually, I mean, the art direction in this movie is so cool. Mm-hmm. I love the space, the lava lamp space backgrounds. Yeah. I love the ridiculous, over-the-top costumes. Max von Sydow.
As Ming the Merciless. It was amazing.
Unrecognizable. Total. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so much fun. And it's just one of those movies that you just switch your brain off and just go with it. Just have some fun.
There were times out there where I was laughing out loud in some of the scenes because it was just so absurd.
It was
good.
The scenes with Ming in the palace were really, really, really well done. Great, lot of great influence from the 20s and 30s Art Deco style.
Oh yeah, yeah.
When they started to get out there with, who's that James Bond? From the 80s.
Timothy Dalton.
Timothy Dalton.
They visited him. He lived in the forest or something. Yeah. It started to look as though, you know, Dino, he's always big on sets and stuff.
Yeah.
Not a lot of location shooting. So it felt like it was on a set.
Yeah. But
those scenes in the palace were just incredible.
Yeah.
Like, as an aside, I'm in love with his granddaughter, Giada De Laurentiis.
All right. Once again, killing the conversation. What you got for us, Ross?
I have this little known movie called Explorers.
Explorers. That's
Ethan Hawke's in it, or wasn't Ethan Hawke?
Yeah. No, you're right. Ethan Hawke. Yeah.
Was that the one where they build the spaceship in there?
Oh, it's the...
Yeah.
Oh, okay. What's the one that had the glowy orb that...
You're thinking about Flight of the Navigator? No.
No. Actually, I just watched that again the other day. Solar Babies, maybe?
Glowing orb. Ugh. I don't...
I think it is Solar Babies, because they played inline hockey with it.
Oh. Yes. Yeah. That was the MacGuffin in the movie. They were trying to keep that away from.
Yeah.
Explorers was. I felt it was one of those movies that really build up and pay off at the end.
One of the Coreys in that too.
It was Ethan Hawke, Richard River Phoenix, Jason Preston was in it. Joe Dante directed it.
Yes.
I thought it just did really well, and it sort of built on that what Spielberg had done 3 years earlier with E.T. and looked at kids. And at the time, I was about the same age. You could relate to these kids living in suburbia, and we had all these incredible imaginations and no real outlet for it. And they built a spaceship, basically. You learn later that it was because some aliens were planting the ideas into one of the kids' heads. But it was kind of neat to see, you know, empower three kids, basically, and to give them the opportunity to travel in space and meet aliens and everything. It was, and
I'm not sure if it would work the same today, though, because the kids today just don't use their imaginations as much as we did when we were kids. Because, when I was a kid, I lived in castles.
Kids today.
I said that, Grandpa.
God, I'm not the one shaking my fist, yelling, get off the lawn.
Yeah, it's my cane.
it's just nothing is simplistic. Nothing's made with a simplistic theme. Like, you're saying it could be remade, what would it look like now? There would be all these... smaller plot elements. Mm-hmm. They wouldn't just come up with the idea, and it would have to come from jacking into the net or some.
They'd have to control it with like Wii controllers.
Exactly. I mean, they made their spaceship in this movie out of a tilt-a-whirl and a washing machine. It was stuff that, you know, it transcends generations. We all can relate to, and that's why it holds up. I mean, you mentioned, you make things out of Wii's, and there's so many science fiction genre films that do that. They put product placement in there, and then you watch it 5 years later, and it's so dated.
In E.T. they had Speak and Spell, and Reese's Pieces.
And Star Wars figures, and I mean... those are all there.
Yeah.
Still, we still have Speak and Spells that don't do much better than they did back then. But I think he was more... He was lucky.
Yeah. Actually, I found an online Flash version of Speak and Spell.
Oh, did you really?
The other day.
You got to hook me up with the address, because I used to love me some Speak and Spell.
Alrighty. Next up is, for me, is Lady Hawk. Another Red Richard Donner movie. Matthew Broderick, Rutger Hauer, Michelle Pfeiffer. See, Michelle, I do love you. It was about two lovers who were cursed to never be in the same place at the same time. Like, at night, he was a wolf, and during the day, she was a hawk. And it was just this, like, love affair going on between these two people that could never see each other again. It's a beautiful story. I really enjoyed it.
Never seen it.
Really?
I went to see it opening day, and I was going in for medieval adventures and such. And the opening scene, or the opening when the title came out, do you remember what the music was like? It was very 80s heavy metal guitars. It went on for about 5 minutes. I'm pretty sure. Unless my brain is failing me, it totally ruined the rest of the movie for me, because it didn't get me hooked right away. It's like thrown off by that. Really bad choice of music.
And yes, you do need a good hook.
You do.
Yes.
My last pick for the 80s was going to be The Quiet Earth, but I don't think anybody else here has seen it.
I've seen it.
Yeah?
Yeah. A British film?
New Zealand? Yeah. Last Man on Earth kind of thing. But instead, I think I'm going to switch up and go with The Last Starfighter instead.
Oh, good choice.
I love that movie.
Again, I think the whole video game aspect of that kind of played in, and I think that's sort of what sort of captured the imagination of a certain audience back then.
Right.
The recruitment for this intergalactic war that's going on through the video game. It was great. I mean, it kind of played off of, you know, everything that was sort of established by Star Wars. It was almost Star Wars-esque kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You know, him being sort of the Luke Skywalker and all that, but
because he shouldn't have been chosen, because Earth was such a backwater planet that they weren't going to put one of the games on it.
Right.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah, but it was so entertaining and so engaging and so much fun. When they leave the fucking the droid that looks like him, the robot that looks like him behind, and it's a little socially inept, and it's a great film. Robert Preston as the mentor, he was fantastic.
I was surprised that it didn't do better. I saw it 3 times in the theater, and I was just blown away. But and then I think it lasted about 2 weeks, and it fizzled out.
But they had a flying car in it. They still don't have a flying car.
They had a lot of really cool things. And I think what happened was some of those genres it was being marketed as a video game movie. And people were sort of burned out after Tron. A lot of people didn't like Tron.
Yeah.
And they didn't want to try a different movie. Even though I don't think the video game was really the driving
it was the hook
but there were other things in it that sort of paid off in that movie, and it was the video game crash in the early 80s too, and people just didn't want to see that anymore.
Well, it's another one too that I think it lived on much more successfully on video than it did in the theaters, much like Terminator. A lot of films sort of built their following on video in the 80s. It was sort of the way things worked then.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. My third one is RoboCop.
Sweet.
And I have to talk about RoboCop. It's I think my first R. No, Aliens was my first R, but my first Canadian R movie that I'd seen.
for our American friends, movies in Canada are rated different than what you guys get. In Canada, you'll generally see that violence gets a harsher rating than sexuality, where you guys sort of tend to be the opposite. A lot of the stuff that you guys rate R for the sexual content actually comes up here as 14 plus, which is anybody under 14 needs to come in with a parent. 14 and under has to come in with a parent. And it's got to be pretty hardcore before you get that 18 plus. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, when I was down in the States, I'd seen Aliens and The Fly, and RoboCop was the first one I could get into up here, and wow. Yeah.
Hmm. Wow pretty much describes that movie. From start to finish, beautiful.
One of those movies that I thought would look straight to DVD. I'd seen posters up for a few months beforehand, and it looked really corny. It looked like a lot of the other stuff that was made at the same time that was really sort of on the cheap. And even the name of the movie, there's so many other movies that had sort of like the same kind of thing, like Robo Jocks and tons of stuff.
Circuitry Man.
Circuitry Man. Cherry 2000. Eve of Destruction.
Oh, good one.
just things that were trying to pull you in with the title or some cheap effects. Mm-hmm. And RoboCop, really, I'd seen and the first time I'd heard of it was back in about a year before, and they were just putting it together, and you know, it's the same thing. Oh man, here it comes, another one of those very formulaic movies, and boy, what a surprise, what a shocker that it actually...
Well, what was so great about it is that it was so bloody violent, and it had, you know, it had the sex, it had the violence, it had a grit to it, it was funny, and it was thrilling, and it was saying something about the time that we were living in. You know, it was making a bold statement in terms of its visual style and look for the future. It's being remade. Darren Aronofsky's going to remake it. And I think that is such a huge mistake. I really do think that if you went back in and maybe fixed up some of the, the robot, the Ed
209s.
But what's that type of animation called?
Animatronic.
Stop motion.
If you went back in and maybe fixed some of that, I think that RoboCop, as it is, would be very re-releasable in an anniversary edition.
Yeah. The only issues were like the hairstyles and stuff like that, and the glasses.
But it's supposed to be in the future. And it wasn't like you had big-ass fucking 80s hairdos in there. Mm-hmm. Even Nancy Allen had a really short haircut, but which kind of, you know, led to the reality of the police force that they were trying to portray. I mean, you don't have long-haired chicks on the police force because...
I think this was my first Paul Verhoeven movie, actually. Mm-hmm. I think
I saw Flesh and Blood before I saw this. Had you seen Soldier of Orange or anything?
I did see Flesh and Blood before I saw this.
Yeah.
But, you remember we were talking about this before, about how, how forward thinking this was. Remember when, what's his character?
The Disc. You're talking
about. Kurtwood Smith goes into,
Miguel Ferrer's.
Yeah.
Apartment.
Thank you. and it puts the little CD into the CD player, and it's a video.
Yeah.
At the time, well, DVDs weren't even going to be out for another 10 years.
Yeah.
Like, that was brilliant. Ah, I love that movie a lot. Oops. Sorry for the bang. My last one for the 80s is The Hidden.
Oh,
I saw this in the theater. Again, it was one of those ones where I went in cold. Some friends went us, hey, do we want to go see the movies? Sure. What's playing? I don't know. Went in there. The one that they wanted to go see was sold out. So we went to go see The Hidden. And I am so glad. It was awesome. Just the opening scene with the car chase, and just the level of violence, it was so tasty.
Yeah, I think my first exposure to it was on actually Siskel and Ebert, who both gave it a really really favorable review, but then of course it never came to the theater in Moose Jaw, and so I ended up seeing it on video, and yeah, it kicked ass. It was a really good
Sudbury,
movie.
Sudbury, Ontario.
Oh, I can't say much about it. I just Kyle MacLachlan's in it.
Yeah, if I'm right. Michael Murray and Claudia Christian.
It didn't stand out for me, really. I thought it was more in the horror genre, but it was such a long time ago. I saw it in late '80s on video.
It's a space hunter coming to track down a renegade alien, criminal alien.
Yeah. And they just take over the corpses of people.
Yeah.
Whether or not they're corpses to begin with.
Yeah, not so much corpses when they start.
Yeah.
We have gremlins in the projection booth. Could you help us? Gremlins? In this theater? Now? Okay, you guys, listen up. People pay good money to see this movie. When they go out to a theater, they want cold sodas, hot popcorn, and no monsters in the projection booth. Do I have to come up there myself? Do you think the Grimsters can stand up to the Hulkster? Well, if I were you, I'd run the rest of Gremlins 2 right now.
Sorry, folks. It won't happen again.
Okay, the first one I got here from the 90s is Alex Proyas's Dark City. I mean, this is a movie you can look at and you can see where every element has been plucked from someplace else. It's very derivative in style, story, and everything else. But the way it's pieced back together is like something you've never seen before.
Yeah, I was working a lot at the time. My roommate went to go see it before I did. And he said, you've got to go see this. And I generally don't go to the theater by myself. And I did for this one. And I walked out of there after it was done. And it was I couldn't stop thinking about it for days after it was done. And it was just, it was amazing. Just the whole thought, everything about it.
Yeah.
I saw it on video, I think, the first time. I'm sorry, I didn't see it in theaters. And
you bastard, you're not supporting the theater industry.
I know. It's just where you are in your life. Where I was finishing school at the time, and I just didn't have time to see it. And I remember seeing it in video finally, and I don't think it conveyed to me as how good it was, because seeing it on a small screen loses a lot, especially in an artistic.
I've only ever seen it on video as well, but I think I've only ever seen it on DVD. Like, I don't think I ever saw a videotape copy of it, like a pan and scan, or, you know. But it's all there. I actually, rewatching the director's cut, I kind of noticed how small it was. It's one of those movies you walk away with it having an impression of it being much bigger than it is. But just a very cool movie. And your first pick from the 90s?
Yes, my first pick. Gremlins 2.
The new batch.
Once again, came out a week before, or it came out actually the same weekend as Dick Tracy. And Dick Tracy was just a huge publicity juggernaut. Yeah. And it knocked poor Gremlins 2 just way just off into the ditch. Didn't really get the attention it deserved. A huge satire on technology corporate America and Ted Turner and the sort of how media had become such a fragmented monstrosity. And in fact, it even got worse. This was back in 90, and Joe Dante was quite a visionary in sort of seeing where we would go with the whole direction of our television nowadays. And
well, even go back to Network. Like, you've seen Network, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Like, it's amazing how prophetic that movie is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I remember seeing Gremlins 2 for the first time working at a group home, and they had it on videotape. They had rented it, and I worked night shift, and I was watching it all alone, and I thought the tape broke, and then this guy comes
on. Seeing it on, I saw it in Orlando on the opening day in the matinee down at the Lowe's Theater near Disney World.
What kind of popcorn did you get?
I'm not as intense as you, but I can tell you pretty much the whole experience. But we saw it, and it was probably the only time the theater was packed to see Gremlins 2. We were packed in there, and they had the scene, but in the when you saw it on the screen, it actually looked like the
cell burned.
The cell started to burn, and I don't know if it's on the DVD version. Both scenes,
I don't know, but yeah, on the video version, the original one, it just had like snow or something.
Yeah, that was well done too. But people were screaming in the theater and throwing their popcorn and saying that this it actually burnt or broke down. And then it was kind of neat, because in the video version, John Wayne comes out and shoots the gremlins. They start flipping through channels. Video different channels. And then John Wayne finally comes out and says, get the hell back into the movie, and he blows a few of them away. And in the film version, which is more rare, the film breaks down and Hulkster is in the audience. He gets up and yells and says to get the movie going again.
Hulk Hogan?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
it was really, yeah.
It was much cleverer and a little bit more pointed than the first one. The first one is more of a sort of adventure type, whereas this one had something.
Went back to Gremlins being what the term Gremlin was, that it was a creature that would cause wreak havoc to machinery and it definitely it was an absolute playground for the Gremlins to be in, this Trump Tower kind of place with all this talking elevators and talking bathroom stalls. It was just brilliant. A lot of this stuff, how it holds up now.
Yeah.
My first one for the 90s was Demolition Man. With Sylvester Stallone, Wesley Snipes.
Sandra Bullock.
Sandra Bullock, yeah. And yeah, just... Rob Schneider. Like, yeah, you don't know how to use the shells, but yeah, the whole society is perfect. Like, crime has been eradicated. It's fantastic, but that's only on the surface. Below, things are still messy and dirty, and this criminal escapes from prison, which is just like,
cryogenically
frozen. And they have to thaw.
He was over the top, though.
Wesley Snipes?
Yeah. Simon Phoenix's character, his blonde afro. And
the fucking blue eyes that Stallone was wearing in Judge Dredd.
Yeah. I think if they made the guy an actual badass, I mean, whenever I saw whatever he did in the movie Demolition Man, I know he was supposed to be the baddest of the bad, but he was just such a joke watching him. Like, I had no connection to whatever havoc he caused in this society. He was going to get his ass kicked eventually.
Who is the leader of the underground? I can see his face.
Dennis Leary.
James Remar. Oh, it's Dennis Leary?
Leary, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, he does one of his Leary rants.
Yeah.
About beef and something or other.
So my next one is, and I'm fully prepared for you guys to come ragging on this, so bring it. Is The Island of Dr. Moreau, the remake with Val Kilmer and Marlon Brando, Fairuza Balk, and David Thewlis.
See, I actually kind of enjoyed it.
I liked it.
I liked the original version as well.
Yeah. I thought that the creature effects were just fucking amazing. I have to admit that that is really what attracts me to the movie. And, I mean, like, the sex part was kind of ick, but I thought it was cool. I thought it was really, really cool.
One of the parts of it that remains with me is... him watching Fairuza Balk's character dancing to that music, and it's like, wow, it was such a nice, sexy kind of scene, and I really liked it a lot.
Val Kilmer did a great job he sort of did a caricature of Marlon Brando in a few scenes, and he nailed it. He's really, really well done.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe that Brando was allowed it to happen. But there's a lot of genre guys in the movie. I just noticed that William Hootkins is in it, and Tamura Morrison. They're in the Star Wars movies. And
Tamura Morrison, Once Were Warriors.
Yeah. Ron Perlman was in it. Yeah. And
well, any movie that has something that has like full facial prosthetics, it's going to be
the hyena or the...
Sayer of the Law.
Oh, okay.
Probably.
But no, I thought it was...
Lion Man, wasn't he?
No, I think he was the hyena. Okay. Anyhow, we'll pass it off to Ross here.
Okay. My first or second movie is Starship Troopers. Sweet. I hope you guys didn't have one of those. Have
no,
that down?
No.
Oh, Verhoeven. Well, yeah. Verhoeven showing again.
he just if you watch all three Starship Troopers movies, you just see what sort of elements he can add. I mean, you strip away everything else and just make them science fiction movies. They're very similar, all three.
Mm-hmm.
But he had this satirical edge to the whole thing, and he can make commercials or propaganda or advertisements on television or mock advertisements look so real and connected to what we have in society now. It was just incredible, let alone just the all-out shock value of the movie and the aliens and...
Oh, yeah, and all the bugs. It was just great.
Well, that aspect of it as well calls back to RoboCop. Like, I mean, you know, he's basically structurally remaking RoboCop, but in the future, like a outer space kind of future, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the satire is still there. The social commentary is still there.
But I think the satire was so thick that a lot of people were turned off.
Of people were.
Yeah, and they didn't get it.
Well, I think because, I don't know, I think my thought is that people were coming in and it was like, big giant bugs? Are you fucking kidding? Like, you know, and well, I think that was...
I knew what the monster was when I went in to see it because I saw the trailers for it before. But I know I wasn't expecting the high level of cheese that was being served with it. It came off as a very cheesy science fiction movie, but it fucking worked.
Well, this was his follow up to Showgirls as well, right?
Yeah.
So I think maybe he was with the cheese factor. He was maybe trying to prove a point in that you know, you can do something like that, and you know, have it be fun, and I don't know, you know what I mean? Like, because Showgirls was so badly brutalized in by the critics and everything that
sure did have a lot of boobies, though.
I love Showgirls; it's just a cool fucking movie. But
yeah, my second one for the 90s is Iron Giant, the animated, awesome movie about this alien robot that crashes to Earth, and a little boy that befriends it. And it was actually a war machine, but it had this great big dent in its head, and he lost that part of his memory. And just the him teaching the robot things, and just it was such a warm movie. I really enjoyed it.
Well, it's E.T. animated, you know. It's fundamentally the same kind of story.
If E.T. was a warmonger.
Well, do we know that he wasn't?
No, we don't, actually.
There you go. I mean, you know, fairly derivative story again, but really exceptionally well done. Brad Bird was the one that did this.
Yes.
Did not do The Incredibles and Finding Nemo.
And the voice of Iron Giant?
Is Vin Diesel.
Vin Diesel.
Yeah.
I don't remember the voice, really.
There's no spoken word. It's just kind of grunts and groans.
Well, that's why he was doing it then.
Jennifer Aniston, Harry Connick Jr.
His voices. I really like the save. It's very 50s style. The drawing and you really felt it really reflected a 50s kind of feel to it. Kinda, even the military, they didn't go too over the top and make it look foreign, and I think that was one reason why it was successful. I also liked the ending. I thought the ending was really well done, even though it did have that big explosion payoff at the end. There was at the end, you could see the pieces. Oh, geez, am I going to give this out? Like, is this a spoiler after 10 years?
It's kind of best to avoid as much as possible.
The best scenes, though, are at the very end, where it leaves it up to your imagination as to how the film ends. You can either just think that, you know,
one thing happens,
but you can. It also opens up possibilities for others.
Which I like the main investigator guy there who, it's like he's seeing a commie in every bush. You know, he's that kind of guy.
Yeah.
Like the aliens, they're there. Yeah, it was just brilliantly done, the whole thing.
Next is Event Horizon, probably the I'm sure you guys are going to shit all over this one too, but I don't care. It's probably the closest to like a really, 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 really good movie Paul W. Anderson has made.
I like Mortal Kombat. I thought it was all right.
Really?
Mortal Kombat! Yeah, I really enjoyed that soundtrack.
Oh, I love the soundtrack. The KMFDM.
That's going to be... Okay. Event Horizon was... it was good. It was exactly what I expected to see, like a horror in outer space kind of concept, sort of some 2001 elements. And
see, I was disappointed when I saw it because I was expecting something else. I think that's what happened. It didn't live up to what I was expecting, and I'm sure if I would have saw it something else, or if I went in cold, I would have been all right.
I don't know. I really liked it. I like the... I mean, it's one of those science fiction that kind of brings in the whole theology aspects of everything, where you know where you go right back around to the basis of religion and good and evil and all that kind of stuff. And
it was much better the second time I saw it.
Yeah.
So.
And Sam Neill was on a roll that year. He did In the Mouth of Madness as well too, which just kicked ass. But I liked it.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to talk about a movie that I think started to steer science fiction into new genres, Playing with Time, as just that being an element in its own. And I'm going to say my third movie for the 90s is Orlando.
Ah, the...
With Tilda Swinton.
Yeah.
Directed by...
The woman, Sophie... Sophie Moyer? What's
that? Anyway, Orlando, it's not your tradition. You don't think of that as being the a science fiction movie. Sally Potter, directed from a Virginia Woolf novel.
Orlando starts off as
a man and becomes a woman.
Yeah.
No explanation really in the movie as to why Tilda Swinton's character doesn't ever die. Just travels through time and changes genders, and basically sees three or four centuries through this person's eyes.
I've never seen it. I don't know anything about it. It's really cool.
But if we can put Forrest Gump into science fiction, we can definitely put Orlando. Absolutely. I think Orlando was one of the first movies that sort of looked at a new. Device for science fiction in terms of time travel or immortality. It's used all the time, especially in television, sci-fi, Lost Heroes, Battlestar Galactica, Playing with Time, and the character who can be in different time periods all at the same, in the same lifespan. So, and it's a great movie.
Great call. Good call. Yeah. Very good call.
Yep. My last one for the 90s is, strangely enough, Paul W.S. Anderson's next movie after Event Horizon, Soldier. With Kurt Russell as Todd. And it's just these genetically engineered soldiers in the future that go out and actually fight all of our battles for us. So we don't have to get our hands dirty. And... his meeting of the next model and just showing that he does it, like he has 18 words in the whole movie, and people were like, oh, that's horrible, but he made each one of those words count, you know.
I did like it. Did you know, I think it's the guy that did the art direction for this is the same guy that did Blade Runner and what do you call it, the Spinner. If you look in one of the junk heaps in The Soldier, there's a Spinner there.
Mm-hmm. It was I'm surprised it's getting such a really crappy rating on the IMDb. But then, surprised?
It wasn't received well when it came out, and it didn't do very much in theaters.
No. That's too bad because I really enjoyed it. I watched it like 3-4 times.
It was fun. I mean, it's your basic brainless sci-fi action flick. It's one of those things, you know, turn off your brain and go with it.
Yeah. I think I look at the Terminator movies. You have somebody who has 18 lines, you said, in the movie?
18 words.
18 words. So you have a very, very difficult character to sort of embrace as a protagonist or somebody who propels the movie. The Terminator movies, which I see very similar in terms of having a main character in a science fiction movie with very little connection to you or me.
Mm-hmm.
And why do we follow these characters? I think Terminator did it very well by putting secondary characters that we could really connect with. Linda Hamilton and Edward Furlong,
mm-hmm.
Much to your chagrin, in the second movie.
But the silent hero, I mean, that harkens back to The Man with No Name, you know, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and stuff like that.
All supported by great secondary casts.
But you have that really hyper-machismo male protagonist that... that's all he's got to do is be strong and be tough and right. and fight the good fight, and right. we as an audience attach to him.
Right. But with this movie, I mean, you brought up some westerns in your
yeah.
debate there. I mean, westerns we can relate to, I think, better than fighting on a remote planet. I mean, we're already thrown into an alien environment. You need to embrace, have some connectivity to, as we talked about at the beginning of the show, you have to connect with something in the movie. If you cannot connect with the main characters, then how are you supposed to be thrown into a far-off, distant planet?
How do you suspend your disbelief?
How do you suspend it? Yeah. I couldn't connect with Kurt Russell. So, and I didn't feel that the supporting cast had gave me any connection either. So,
cool.
Yeah.
So well, we are have, on. You have the right to be completely wrong.
Beyond our galaxy lie worlds no one has ever seen.
Whoa!
And a threat no one could imagine.
We're taking heavy fire.
You've got to get out of here.
Two people face the ultimate challenge.
You can't beat the Dredge.
No.
We're going to stop them.
As they take off on the wildest ride of the summer. Titan After Earth. Rated PG.
Okay, so we're on to the 2000s then. And I'm kind of surprised looking at my list here because I keep coming back to fucking Spielberg. And my first one is Minority Report.
Oh.
As more than anything else, the reason I really like this movie is its vision of the future. I think that yeah. it shows a side of technology that we're really on the path to.
Yeah.
And we're on the verge of it, yeah.
And utilized in really, really practical, unconscious ways that I think that we're leading to. I think that it as a vision of the future, it's very realized. Story is probably not as strong as the visual style, but still quite engaging and a fun ride.
Mm-hmm. I was just excited because this was the sequel to Total Recall in earlier incarnations.
Oh, this is it's a Philip Dick adaptation as well, isn't
right.
it?
Right. Yeah. But they were the original screenplay was going to utilize the mutants from Mars as the precogs in the second movie. But they decided to make this an entirely different story, and it was really good. I thought it did well.
Who plays the one that
Samantha Morton?
Yeah, I really like her. She does some great work.
And there were some great twists in the movie and characters that you thought were not going to meet their end the way they did. And yeah, great movie. My first movie, I really had a difficult time finding movies in the 2000s that were, that we weren't going to talk about and weren't franchise movies. So I'm going to go with Mission to Mars. That's how desperate I was. It came out in 2000. really, for a few years, we'd been watching Mars a lot because there was this evidence of life on Mars back in 97. And it was a heated, you know, topic of interest for a lot of people for a couple years. And then Mission to Mars came out, I think, too late, sort of like, you know, releasing Can't Stop the Music after the disco craze. Is over. That's what I felt like with Mission to Mars. A little too late, but good effort, and totally not what you'd expect from Brian De Palma. And there were some really good Brian De Palma scenes in the movie, though. Mm-hmm. His trademarks. Overall, though,
it's impeccably shot, impeccably acted. But it's mind-bendingly boring. Like, it is, like, you can feel every second of that movie.
Just like a real Mission to Mars. It would,
I guess so. I mean, I really haven't got anything bad to say about it, except that it is...
It somehow didn't click.
Well, yeah, it's got some really, really great ideas and some good actors that maybe aren't the most engaging of characters. Maybe there was too much time spent getting to Mars.
Yeah.
I think maybe if there was more time spent on Mars. Like, I mean, okay, Red Planet is nowhere near as good as this movie is. Like, in terms of, you know, good. Like, but it's... At least it moves and it's engaging and you're not doing that, you know,
the head bob.
Head pez thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I there's a scene I can't really go into detail. Don't want to give it away, but they're in orbit. The astronauts are in orbit around the Mars, and it's very typical De Palma style in that scene. He likes to do long camera shots and continuous camera shots.
I was just going to say, was there any split screen? Where two characters are doing something different than the kind of, you know.
Well, that's
not sure, but wasn't it? Yeah. That's how bad it is for the last 8 years, I think.
My first one for the 2000s is Doomsday. By Neil Marshall. I could talk a lot about it, but I know that Alan is dying to talk about this.
Well, no, I mean, yes, I love the shit out of this movie. Like I said, you know.
It was like Mad Max meets... Mm-hmm. Oh, what was the other one that was...
Escape from New York.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And you know me, give a bitch a gun and I'm in. Like, I love female action heroes. And this is very, very, very... action orientated. Rona Mitra. Yeah. I mean, it almost made her sound like a headache cure, but I love her. She kicked ass. I can't wait to see the new Underworld film because I enjoy me some
Rona Mitra.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And Neil Marshall. I mean, he impressed the fuck out of me with The Descent, and I really. Mm-hmm. Still do think that this guy has a brilliant career ahead of him.
Right.
Yes, and this one here, yeah, it lived up to everything that I was hoping for.
Yeah.
It was one of those ones you turn off your brain and it's like, ah,
oh, yeah. Stuff.
I enjoyed it.
I thought it was going to go formula a lot of times, and it really... took different directions. You entered scenes in the movie where you thought certain characters would make it through, and they get get destroyed, and it was quite shocking.
Halfway through the movie, literally goes medieval on your ass.
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, it's back to me.
It is back.
Back to me. Hello. Southland Tales.
Oh, yes.
I still don't know what the fuck the movie was about, but I loved every second of it.
The first time I watched it, I was like, huh? Second time, it was a little bit clearer. I'm probably going to have to watch it but another two or three times where I figure out exactly what it's all about and watch all of the little bits in the extras.
See, I love movies like that. Richard Kelly, who wrote and directed it, is the guy that did Donnie Darko, which I think is another great film.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like I can't wait to watch it a second time because I do really think that a lot of the gaps are going to fill in and everything. It has the most eccentric, eclectic, schizophrenic fucking cast I think I've ever seen in any movie.
The Rock was awesome in it.
But so was Terry O'Cherry.
And so was Justin Timberlake.
Too. And Christopher Lambert.
Yeah.
And Stifler.
Oh, and
that's just it. You can sit here all night going, and.
Amy Poehler.
Oh, Amy Poehler, yeah. John Lovitz.
John Lovitz, yeah. His character completely out of left field.
The casting is inspired in this. It's just, it's fantastic. I haven't got anything mean to say, and I don't have anything really too smart to say about it, because, like I said, I'm still figuring it out, but I love it.
Yeah. Enough said.
Off to you,
sir. All righty. I've got X-Men, which is not really, I'd say more superhero. It comes from an established base of 40 years of written material, but I think it did very well in capturing the characters and taking the best parts from the comics. Even part 3, I just watched 3 earlier this week again. There's a lot of bad taste in people's mouths over 3, but I think it was a good bookend to the first trilogy.
Yeah, I had problems with X-Men. But that's only because I did grow up on the X-Men comic books. When I was 5 years old, well, 4 years old, I got a great big box full of comics from one of my cousins, and in it were like very, very early Marvels. And yeah, I had all the X-Men right up from the very beginning. So having Iceman as a student instead of one of the actual X-Men,
continuity stuff. Yeah.
I know that comics are, by their very nature, rebooted all the time. So
yeah,
I've gotten over it, and I did rather enjoy it.
No, I thought it was great, and the opening scene in the war camp. I mean, I think it's pretty brave with this kind of material that if you're gonna open with the freaking Holocaust, mm-hmm. then you better be bringing it. And Singer did. I mean, Singer really did. I think more so with the second one, but the first one is fantastic. It's a very, very cool movie.
Alrighty. Next up for me is Pitch Black, the start of the Chronicles of Riddick, as you know. Vin Diesel as this escaped convict that is being...
Or Ving Rhames, as I like to call him.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You called him Ving Rhames last time. That's right. Who has been like tracked down by Cole Hauser, who plays this who everybody thinks he's a cop, but it turns out he's just a bounty hunter. A drug addicted bounty hunter at that. And these creatures that only come out when it's dark on this planet that has like 3 suns, and crazy action, low budget Australian movie, but fucking worked from start to finish.
It's got a great style. I mean, mm-hmm. the way that it's shot, the way that the film is processed, mm-hmm. it's got a very distinctive look to it.
It's a fairly neat, original kind of ideas. Not original, but ideas that hadn't been tapped as often as other ones.
It's got certain horror elements to it as well, mm-hmm. or like that whole creature feature kind of thing. And it plays with, you know, the fear of the dark kind of thing. I like it. I really do like it. I still have not seen Chronicles of Riddick, but I do really, really, really like Pitch Black.
Mm-hmm. And not just for Vin Diesel.
Not just for him.
he does,
but it helps.
Yes. Okay, fine.
So that's back to me. My next pick is Equilibrium, with Christian Bale and Taye Diggs and Madeline Stowe.
I love this movie.
I know you do. I know. And, it's very Orwellian.
Yes.
I mean, again, not a lot of originality here, but...
also kind of Fahrenheit...
411?
No, what's that? Fahrenheit 451?
Or 451, I can't remember.
Oh, man, it's been so long. It's just because I keep thinking 9/11, Fahrenheit 911. Anyways, but yeah, art and anything that can cause emotion is being destroyed.
Yeah. Now, who directed this? I know that his follow-up is like Ultraviolet or something, isn't it? Like, he's very, very, very stylized filmmaking. Kind of the same vision of the future that he has in both films, in a way.
Kurt Wimmer.
Yes.
And the choreography, like the gun kata, as it's called in the movie,
yeah,
just brilliant.
Yeah.
And this came a couple of years before
2002. Before what?
Wanted?
No, when did Matrix?
Matrix
Bullet Kaka.
Oh, Matrix is 98, dude.
Oh. What am I thinking of this? With this one there, then?
I don't know.
I don't either, but still, I love it.
It was good. It felt... There was a lot of movies at the time, such as Ultraviolet, which came out a few years later, and Aeon Flux.
I love Aeon Flux, man.
The stories are great, but it felt like every movie was in the same cityscape, sort of Euro,
yeah,
CG Euro looking people fall in this really bad groove, and it becomes everybody starts wanting to do the same thing, the same look, and it's not just now, it's gone back. We talk about the 80s and RoboCop and Gremlins 2 Total Recall has all that sort of gray industrialized look for a future city. Mm-hmm. It looks the same, too. You go back further, and we were talking about the 70s. Everything looked like it was in an airport hangar or airport waiting lobby.
Mm-hmm.
Big large areas.
Well, you get that one movie that sort of creates that new vision and sort of, you know, sort of turns the page on the look.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, anything 80s that's post-Blade Runner is going to have
that Japanese sort of aesthetic to it. Sort of,
yeah,
foreign neon light wording and such. Yeah.
So after The Matrix, you're going to have that more kind of urban, sterile kind of.
Yeah,
but
which is sad, because Equilibrium, I think, could have been a breakout movie more if it took its own style and went with it. I mean, the gun kata was so unique and different.
Well, and I think that was maybe part of the problem with Equilibrium in terms of its success, is that it's kind of like Nightbreed. How the fuck do you market it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you market it to the action or to the martial arts people? Do you market it to the sci-fi people? You know, like, who's this movie for?
And that's I knew nothing about it before I watched it. I hadn't even heard of it, and I was like, oh, Christian Bale?
It's a bad title. It makes sense to the movie and what have you, but it sounds like an artsy fartsy flick, and
it does not draw you in.
Yeah, like they should have called it Gun Kata. You probably make an extra $50 million right there. No, but it, really, because Equilibrium sounds sort of like Merchant Ivory, kind of.
Hey! I enjoy some Merchant Ivory. All right, sir, you're up next.
Back to me already?
Yeah.
I'm gonna say it again. I didn't really find anything in the last 7 years, but Planet Terror was a half of Grindhouse, and it was, I thought, the better half. I have some bones to pick with Rodriguez and his style of movies, and I know you've talked about it in your last show about how he's a maverick and
he's
quite
a god.
And a god, but we'll save that for another day. I thought Rodriguez did really well in creating a 70s exploitation horror flick.
I'd say 80s more than 70s.
80s, you're right. Yeah. But he's added. He adds a lot of 70s elements, like grainy stock footage and missing reels and everything. And I thought his use of a missing reel was a lot better than Tarantino, they both decided we'll put missing reels in. And Rodriguez was brilliant in what happened, how he did it.
Yeah, you didn't miss a lot with it. You just said, "Hey, how come he's all bloody now?" But yeah, Tarantino's was like.
Yeah. What the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, I really enjoyed.
And anything with that. Fergie getting devoured by zombies is great.
Yeah, I enjoyed this movie because it was. I was one of the 12 people that actually saw Grindhouse in the theater.
Oh, yeah.
And it was great. I had no idea that Bruce Willis was going to be in it until I saw him in it, and I was like, oh, "That's kind of cool."
There's so many actors,
And as everybody knows, I'm a huge zombie movie fan. Oh yeah,
Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
My last movie for 2000 was going to be Southland Tales, but as you know, Alan's already talked about it. So I went with another animated feature, the Don Bluth movie Titan AE. I just saw Ross cringe. it's Earth is being destroyed by these aliens, and humanity is being flung out into space. And it's this one boy's search for his father, who has the seeds for all humanity kind of thing in this one ship.
I'm sure he does.
Yeah, that's right. And unlike the phallic ships that Ross keeps on talking about, I don't know, well, what's that about, Ross? This one is a great big large ball. I don't know. I like Don Bluth animation. I rather enjoyed this.
Oh, I love Don Bluth. Great animator, and he used to work with Disney, and he broke off. And unfortunately, though. Mark, this was the movie that killed Fox Animation. In fact, on the opening weekend, they sent out pink slips to everybody in Fox Animation. It was just awful, the reception to this film. And especially, they played this trailer in front of Phantom Menace, and even Phantom Menace crowds were excited. They thought, even though Phantom Menace was a piece of garbage, people walked out and go, "Oh, what about that Titan AE trailer coming summer 2000? I think they showed just the scene with the Earth exploding and a couple ships. Actually, they showed quite a few ships leaving, which doesn't really fit into the story once you see it. They changed it drastically. And,
well, no, it's like all of humanity isn't going to the same place. Like, everybody is spread out. And that's why when the new Earth is created, they're all coming back home.
I thought something about the trailer was different. But anyway... I thought it was going to really do well, and man, it bombed.
I still enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I watched it several times now. I don't know. It was cute. And that would be the end of the 2000.
Okay, so we were planning on doing a lot more stuff, and maybe somewhere down the line we will do those things. But we are running a little long, so we will speed things up, and we're going to jump right into... let's start with our overrated sci-fi films of the last 40 years.
Huh.
Would you like to start us off, Ross?
Let's go with Chronicles of Narnia. I felt that was really overrated. It just went on and on. It was not exciting. It felt like it was in a set, and it was filmed on a set most of the scenes, major scenes, and nothing. It didn't do anything for me. It was quite a letdown.
I actually really enjoyed it. What I find, though, is that I don't find it very rewatchable. It was one of those movies, I've seen it, and I'm good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was one shot. You don't want to go back and catch something that you hadn't seen. Just sort of. Because then you'd have to endure the rest of it.
Also, what else you got there?
Oh, I've got Serenity. Overrated. A lot of hype. Sorry, Mark. Oh, don't. Picking up that pen like it's a weapon. I thought
it would. You only need one eye, right?
I just thought it was. There was a lot of fans, Browncoats, they're called.
Yeah.
Who were predicting 100 mil opening weekend. And there was this sort of, I don't know, I really had hoped that a fan base could create some sort of phenomenon other than, say, Passion of the Christ, because they had such a huge fan base of Christians. You know, and of course, that made that nobody saw that coming. I don't think they
call themselves fans, though.
Well, I'm trying to make a comparison here, but it was weird. It was right out of the blue that everybody wanted to see the Passion of the Christ, and it was through unconventional means to get the propagated and get the audience into the seats. I thought the same with Serenity, that there was a lot of internet chatter coming up into it, and
that in itself helped to get the movie made.
Oh, exactly. But it did the payoff. There was no payoff. It came out with eight or nine mil the opening weekend, and maybe that was why I felt it was overrated. It was a big disappointment. I wanted to see a $100-200 million movie that nobody had really known about.
Apart from the box office take, what did you think of the movie, though?
Nothing that knocked me out.
I know.
I haven't seen it like that in a while.
I never watched the television series, so. Oh, But everybody told me that the movie would be in on itself, and as it never
should.
Was.
It is a standalone movie.
Didn't feel like it, though. Yeah. Felt like I was missing. I was not in on it. On the whole thing.
And yes, I would agree with that. Like, there were, it seemed to be large chunks of it taken out where they should have had some more story in there, but I still liked it. So there.
I have Tomb Raider, overrated. Pretty much everything that could go wrong or how you can make a bad movie was evident in the first two. Over the top. Techno music and, but not in this movie. I mean, technology I never felt that Lara Croft was actually looking for lost relics in a believable world. When you start off with her fighting this Ed 209 ripoff in the basement of her mansion. I mean, everything that happens after that, I mean, Raiders of the Lost Ark felt believable, like a livable world, our world. Mm-hmm. And that's why it was so fantastic to travel with Dr. Jones in his adventures, because it was our world. I mean, Tomb Raider is supposed to be that, too, that she's looking for mythical artifacts. And I thought there's a lot of ways you can go with that sort of story, what Indiana Jones has done, but as I said, it's having fighting a giant robot in your basement sort of just suspends belief for the rest of the movie, and it didn't pay off later on when she found all these neat things in the Antarctic and what have you.
Well, in order for something to be a rule, there has to be an exception, and my whole give the bitch a gun and I'm all over it thing is pretty much overruled by Tomb Raider. I watched 15 minutes of it and I shut it off. It was brutal.
I've watched both of them and I can't remember much about them, except for, was it Gerard Butler in one of them? I don't know. See, that was it.
He's the second one. He was the
okay.
In love interest.
Yeah, see, nothing really stands out except for, yeah, the Ed 209 fight.
Yeah.
And the bungee jumping with the ninjas, whatever the heck they were. Yeah, yeah.
All right, what have you got for us for overrated?
Contact. Jodie Foster.
Really?
Wow.
Matthew McConaughey.
Really?
See, I was expecting a lot more from it.
What more were you expecting from it?
I don't know.
Well, you have to have some idea. I mean, if...
It just had felt wrong to me. Like, I liked parts of it, but it just... It didn't... I don't know. It's hard to explain. Because it was such a long time since I saw it.
Contact is another one of these science fiction films that really has a lot of theological attachments to it, right? It goes back to God.
Hmm.
And so I think if you've got problems with that, you're going to definitely have problems with the movie. If, I don't know, if you're coming at it from a strictly science head, but that's where Jodie Foster's character is coming from, and she gets turned around. I don't know. I really liked Contact. I thought it was a pretty cool movie.
Maybe I'll have to watch it again because I haven't seen it since it was in the theater. So,
yeah,
I just remember being a little bit disappointed.
Yeah, I thought there would be you'd see sort of more of the alien technology that contacted the Earth, and it when that wasn't.
And it's like, wow, the aliens are dad.
Yeah.
Huh.
But then you walk out and I was thinking about this movie for at least a week after I saw it. So something in it worked. I mean, if you're thinking about it, the ramifications and such. So after that, it didn't really bother me that I didn't see the aliens. And I think a lot that's why it failed for audiences. They thought they'd see these, you know, CGI creatures, what have you. nothing like it, right?
Another one that I felt was overrated and probably best forgotten was Screamers.
Oh,
Peter Weller.
Yeah, it.
Jennifer Rubin was in that. Blasphemer.
I know, but
I enjoyed
it. So Philip K. Dick novel too.
Yeah. I enjoyed the book or the story. I think it was a story by him. And
it's kind of Tremors in Space, isn't it?
Yeah. Kind of ish.
Filmed in Montreal in the Big O.
And it ripped me off financially when I went in there and paid a dollar to go see it in Dollar Cinemas in Edmonton.
I think you're being overly harsh. I saw it on video. I didn't mind it. It was an hour and a half distraction. I wasn't that invested.
Yeah.
Okay. How about yourself, sir?
Well, and see, that's kind of that's sort of me with science fiction films, is that I'm very forgiving. I think that if, I don't know, if it shows us something that we haven't seen before, then we're sort of ahead of the game with it. I could go after, like, the Lord of the Rings movies and the Harry Potter movies, but, I mean, they're not my kind of movie to begin with, so why bother? Really, the only one that I could really, really come up with that I would say... was just so overblown and so overrated is fucking Transformers. Like, I almost went into this movie hating it because I was so sick of fucking hearing about it. And it's not a bad movie, but it's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination.
Which actually kind of reminds me that the Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, that should be in the overrated too.
I didn't say it's an overrated film because most people are pretty much on board with you saying that, it's kind of a big piece of shit and should have never happened. So, but yeah, Transformers for me, I would just say just because of a lot of hype that I just wasn't, it was serving Kool-Aid, I wasn't drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, how about movies that we think are a little underrated and hidden away?
Oh,
I'll start this one off. Okay. I've only got really one underrated movie. I haven't really gone through all the list very well, but Predator 2. with Danny Glover.
Good call. Very good call.
In the far future of 1996.
Yeah. I felt was a far superior movie to Predator.
Yeah.
Very well done. And you actually felt something for these characters. The original Predator movie with Arnie, you'd say yay one, but Danny Glover, you actually felt tension, and it's much better.
A great supporting cast: Ruben Blades, Maria Conchita Alonso, Bill Paxton, yes,
yeah,
and Gary Busey.
Oh, right.
Yeah, but that is my pick for an underrated movie.
That's your only pick.
Yeah, if I would have gone back and gone through them all one at a time, I'm sure I could have found more. But as you know, we are a little bit pressed for time here.
Okay, well, I'm not going to be quite as speedy, I think. My first pick is Existenz. It came out pretty much the same time as The Matrix. Yep. I thought it was a little bit smarter than The Matrix, just not as flashy. I thought it was cool. I thought it was... I walked out of Existenz thinking more than I did at the end of Matrix. Matrix, at the end, I was wowed, but at the end of Existenz, I was thinking.
We went to go see that together.
Yeah. Any comments on Existenz?
I haven't seen it since we saw it together.
Yeah, neither have I. I saw it probably the same theater you guys saw it.
Silver City Coquitlam?
Oh, no. Silver City Metropolis. But I remember thinking about it a lot after. It's shortly after Matrix came out.
Yeah.
Before The Phantom Menace, and a lot of stuff that was pretty jarring in it, and you didn't expect, but well done.
It's what I like about it too is that it's sort of low tech, high tech, but kind of higher tech than high tech, because of the merger between man and machine, the sort of the biometrics of it. It's very, very cool.
Mm-hmm.
My next pick was Runaway. A Tom Selleck film with Gene Simmons. And Cynthia Rhodes.
I love that movie, yeah.
Kirstie Alley. You know, it's fundamentally a cop story, but it's set in the future and with all these little runaway robots.
And the smart bullets and things. Yeah.
It was a cool movie. Have you ever seen?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
And you didn't like it as much as we did you?
I just met a guy a few months ago who was an extra on the show. They filmed it in Vancouver here.
Oh, really?
Huh. Yeah.
Cool. I also had Doomsday Down as underrated because people slag on it all the time, but we've talked about it quite a bit. 12 Monkeys. Terry Gilliam's Brazil gets so much fucking love, and 12 Monkeys gets overlooked so much. Yeah. I think 12 Monkeys is brilliant. I think it's just insanely smart and so well acted and engaging, especially for Terry Gilliam. I don't think that he usually succeeds in engaging an audience all the time. But 12 Monkeys pulls you in, and it's a fun ride, and a bit of a mind fuck, and I love that.
Yeah, the ending just blew me away. I love this movie, and I'm feeling woefully unprepared after I just had one.
Any comments on 12 Monkeys?
I was surprised that it didn't do better. I think. Brad Pitt got a supporting actor nomination for it, but
it got several award nominations.
Not really. Nothing. I don't believe it did very well in the box office.
It was sort of like $50 million somewhere
at the very most. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I thought it should have gone a lot further. I think it was a little too bizarre for mainstream audiences. I think the story was great and. But Gilliam, it's hard to get Gilliam's vision
of the future,
convey it and have everybody embrace it. I think he's very meticulous, though, in what he does. But
but those little Fresnel magnifying glasses in front of the little tiny monitors to make a bigger image over. He did it in Brazil as well. Yeah.
Cool. And my last pick was, and I know Ross is just, he's going to get his teeth into this one, Tank Girl. I fucking love Tank Girl.
Yes.
Comments?
No, I thought it was
I love it. Post.
It was a lot of hype. I mean, there was this huge search for Tank Girl, the actress.
Lori Petty?
Yeah, there was a. It was.
She was right there in Point Break.
Well, they spent so much time and so much hype and tabloids on the search for the lead character. The three of the Spice Girls, before they were Spice Girls, tried out. They had lineups all over London to audition for Tank Girl, and yet it went to Lori Petty, who had just been in League of Their Own and Point Break. It was good. It was Malcolm McDowell as he was in every film in the 90s as this sort of smarky villain. And
yeah, that was the one thing I had a problem with when I discussed this with my old roommate. Not my old roommate, but my old roommate.
Yeah, okay.
Plus the way they interjected, sometimes they did animation. They'd show a actual piece of animation or a panel. I thought that was really not.
But that was totally budget constrained.
That's like, true.
Yeah. I mean, that was the quickest, fastest way of moving the story along without spending a ton of money, and it was clever. And it's got this really fast pace, this frantic energy, and I love that. I acknowledge the fact that Tank Girl is not for everybody, but I have a blast with it. And the chick that plays Jet, Naomi Watts. Hello. Awesome. And one of the kangaroo
guys is Ice-T.
Ice-T, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so okay. That moves us on to... Oh, no. We've got Ross's list to do here.
Yeah.
Are we looking at... Okay, so we're looking at gems. My first gem would be Flight of the Navigator. We talked about it. It just recently came out on DVD, re-released, and great use of time travel, and I spoke about explorers, about a child wanting exploring the universe, and that great sort of innocence about the whole thing was really well done.
I can't tell you how many times I've used those little desk lamps that have the little spring arms on them and did the little robot thing on it.
Did you know that it's Paul Rubens that does the voice of the computer?
And
early appearance of Sarah Jessica Parker in that as well.
Yes. Neat. And Howard Hessman's in it too.
Howard Hessman. Nancy Cartwright from Aliens and the Birds.
Yes. I have the next one, and I talked a bit about Gremlins 2 and how it showed technology or everyday technology that we live in can go amok.
Right.
And two other movies that are hidden gems. I first 76 with Julie Christie, Demon Seed. I
fucking love that movie.
Or 77. It might be 77.
I think 76, yeah.
Very dated looking house.
Oh, yeah.
It looked like it's just so. Of course, it looks cool now. You wish you had a house like that. But, of course, the computer that's in the house goes a little wonky. And it talks about creationism and diffusion of technology and biology, which I think is fascinating.
And misogyny.
Yes. Battlestar's talking about it now, how to create a hybrid human and robot creation. And Hardware, 1990.
Very cool movie.
The same thing. Okay. The character brings a piece of military tech back to his apartment, and it basically starts to cause all sorts of crazy things to happen. And it was really, really, once again, what is more comforting than your home and then finding out it's the most alien place of all? I think it's really...
Hardware has an amazing aesthetic to it as well.
Go ahead.
It's got a great look to it, Hardware. It's kind of oranges and reds and dirty, wiry tech, and it's really, really cool.
I haven't seen it, but just the description of it reminds me of that South Park episode with Cartman's Trapper Keeper 2000. where it starts in incorporating all kinds of tech in his room, like it attaches a calculator, then it starts like feeding on humans and things.
Mm-hmm.
But anywho,
no, they've used that a lot. That plot absorbs different tech, and so going on, I love heavy metal. The animated 1981, there's some science fiction stories in there. Some were more horror.
Oh, like, yeah, the 1941 episode of it?
Yeah.
Something. Yeah.
Yeah, with the planes.
And then you got that really
the graveyard.
The big fantasy sequence with the chick on the flying.
Flying whatever it is.
Yeah, that was more fantasy. But there was the Captain Stern with
out of her?
Yeah, it was really, really, really great. Well done, done. And I forget the last or second last segment where they got picked up by a bunch of stoned aliens who landed on top of the Pentagon. That was well done too. Two other animated movies that you might want to check out is Rock and Rule.
Oh yeah,
came out a couple years later. Not as good as heavy metal. Canadian Nelvana made it, I think. Canadian animation company. And finally, a movie that came out in 2003 called Interstellar 555. I don't have the name of the Japanese director, but it was actually a chain of Daft Punk videos.
Okay.
They were done in the style of early 70s Japanese animation and Star Blazers. Amazing. If you've ever seen early 70s Japanese animation, Star Blazers, Gatchaman, Interstellar 555 is perfect homage to it, and it's well done, and it's great story, and it's amazing music. So
the director of that is Kazuhisa Takanouchi.
Ah,
I know it just rolls off your tongue. I can understand why you forgot it.
But it's available on DVD. It's fairly easy to find. It's under the usually have Daft Punk as the big selling point for it. But if you're a fan at all of early animation from that time period, good, check it out. Final two, I'm going to put them together. Idiocracy, Mike Judge's 2005 movie that was trying Fox desperately tried to prevent this or bury it. It made next to nothing in the when it finally got released. I still read articles about the whole behind the scenes effort by Fox to suppress this. I think they stepped on too many toes, offending corporations. Yeah. I mean, Starbucks, you got a hand job when you've got your coffee in the future, and things like that, right?
I thought it was a brilliant movie, and it's completely underrated.
There's probably a great documentary in there or something, just how, why, or all the clock blocking that Mike Judge had to go through to get this made and out there. Morons from Outer Space from 1985, not as well known. It's stars Mel Smith. It's a British UK production. I'm not sure about the director. very, very smart movie about a bunch of guys who land on Earth, and I think some of them get sent to an asylum or a lunatic asylum, and it's really well done. I haven't seen it for in about 15 years, but they
Mike Hodges directed that.
Mike Hodges? Are you?
Yeah.
All right.
Written by Griff Rhys Jones and Mel Smith.
Okay, let's go for our top fives now, and we'll round table this again. We'll let Mark start.
Do all top five or all five?
Your five. We'll go around and do our fives and our four and our three.
Alrighty. In my top five, at the number five position, I have Conan the Barbarian. I was a huge Conan fan, like Savage Sword of Conan. I bought all the issues I could, mainly because it was sometimes you got to see some nudity in it. Sure, it's all drawn, but just the brilliant artwork in it. And I thought that this was one of the best movie adaptations of a comic book that I had seen ever. But any comments there, Ross? I know you had something you were supposed to say there.
No, well, it wasn't a comic adaptation.
Well, it was an adaptation of the comic
book. Novel.
Well, no. Okay, yeah, it was based on the Robert E. Howard Conan, but it drew heavily.
I never would have thought Conan as a comic adaptation or a science fiction, but you're right. It fits the genre perfectly, and it really well done. John Milius.
I don't know.
One of the up and comers of the 70s who was in the same boat, I believe, with Lucas and Spielberg and Coppola and De Palma, and he sort of fizzled out after Conan. I think he did a few other things, but only as a producer, and he's tried to get King Conan out for ages, and now it's out of his hands, I believe, and Brett Ratner was attached to it.
All right, my number five pick is Star Wars Episode IV. We talked about it earlier. We talked about it ad nauseum. I will pass it on to you here, Ross.
Super. Total Recall. We talked about this already.
Paul Verhoeven, yeah. Mars, mm-hmm. Arnold.
My number four would be Fifth Element. Luc Besson's vision of the future. Such a brilliantly realized world. Amazing. A flawless movie for me. I walked out of there and I was stunned at just the how well thought out it was.
I love it. You're right. I mean, it is a very, very fleshed out vision of the future. However, derivative. I mean, there's elements there. I mean, you can see a lot of influence from Blade Runner. Just a little bit shinier and a little bit more polished, a little more high fashion. but so much fun as an adventure. It's comedic moments. Bruce Willis was so great in it. I mean, the scene right after he meets Li Lu and he goes back to his apartment and he's got his hands behind his head and he's looking up at the ceiling, daydreaming about her and everything. He's just very open and engaging in this movie.
You remember the cigarettes that they had to smoke?
Mm-hmm.
That were like 95% filter and the rest was...
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it was... and it also had the religious... aspect in there as well, like the whole monks and things, but I really enjoyed it.
And darkness literally descending on her.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. My number four pick is Catherine Bigelow's Strange Days. I fucking love this movie. It's set New Year's Eve 1999. The millennium's about to turn.
Mm-hmm.
There's you ever see that movie Christopher Walken, Natalie Wood, she died.
Brainstorm.
Brainstorm.
Yeah.
It's kind of a device like that that records your senses and memories and experiences and allows for another person to experience it neurologically. It's a similar device used in this where sort of an important figure is seen assassinated by the police, and it could really sort of undo a lot of stuff. And it's just a very, very cool movie. There's a lot of stuff happening in the interpersonal relationships in the movie. It's got the science fiction aspect in terms of the high tech and Catherine Bigelow style. I think she's just probably one of the most amazing directors working. And Ralph Fiennes, Juliette Lewis, Tom Sizemore, the amazing Angela Bassett.
Mm-hmm.
Great film.
Good.
Thoughts?
Nope. Yeah. I totally agree.
All right.
I have The Abyss, number four. I think you're going to be talking about that later on, Ellen. But really, totally took me by surprise in the summer of '89 with the onslaught of deep sea movies like Deep Star 6 and Leviathan, and what else? There was one more, another deep sea movie, but it was a trend at the time, and fortunately, Cameron took that and bucked it, and we forgot about all those other movies. Mm-hmm. And incredible. Simply incredible. Very good emotional attachment to the characters. Oh, yeah. And the what they went through was just great.
And it caused the sale of titanium wedding rings to skyrocket.
That's true. Yeah.
I think it's just an amazing film. I mean, in terms of, you know, the whole kind of alien genre and stuff like that. You don't really know what you're getting into when you start out in this movie.
I love the continuity in it as well. Like when he throws the ring out in the toilet, and then he fishes it back out with his hand, and his hand is like a dark blue. But, and then later in the movie, it's getting lighter and lighter and lighter.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just brilliant.
And the camaraderie amongst the crew, like, I mean, like you really get attached to these people. Mm-hmm. That scene where they're all singing the song together and everything as they're motoring around. Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, I thought was great. I mean, she kind of comes in with the sort of thankless part and manages to still be empathetic, mm-hmm. like that you can still care whether she lives or dies. I love the Abyss. The vision when he gets to the bottom and sees what there is to be seen is just amazing. The only part of the movie I think that just is pulls you out is when they resurface. The special effects just aren't quite up to what they should be compared to what they were under the water. And just as a little sideline, Catherine Bigelow, who directed Strange Days, was married to James Cameron.
Yes.
Well, there you go.
Yeah.
My number three pick, John Carpenter's The Thing.
Oh, great movie.
Set in Antarctica. They find, they didn't find it. In Sweden, they found it.
Yeah. Which is going to be talked about
in the prequel. I'm waiting for that. Especially seeing as now it's... Moore from BSG that's going to be writing that, right?
Yeah.
Nice. But yeah, John Carpenter's The Thing. Again, it was one of those movies I had no idea what it was about. My mom brought it home from the video store that she worked at, and yes, I had a mom and a sister who worked at video stores. Like, that's how I got a lot of my movies. And yeah, she used to bring home like stacks of movies for me to watch like Friday night. And I would watch them all weekend. And this was one of them, and it stood out so much from all the rest of the crap that, it was one of my favorites.
Cool. My number three is Highlander. We've spoken of this already. I'm talking about the first one, not the sequels, not the TV shows, not just numero uno.
Yeah, because it was nice. It had a nice...
Forget to mention about it is Kick-Ass Queen soundtrack, Kind of Magic.
Oh, yes. Hello. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Alrighty.
I have Star Wars, number three, surprisingly.
Star Wars 3, or your number three pick is Star
Wars? Number three is Star Wars. I feel that Empire is more of a nostalgic thing, and that's why a lot of reviewers put it before Star Wars, but Star Wars is what really set everything off. Empire's got its moments, but it doesn't feel like it's self-contained. Star Wars did.
Yeah.
Star Wars middle end. It was also a pivot point in your childhood as well, too. You can go back in time and think, bam, I was right there.
Yeah. And it was before Lucas had the money and the gonads to put Muppets in his movies and silly stuff. I thought if you watch the first Star Wars, there's a lot of stuff, you know, you can tell it's people in silly $5 Halloween masks and things, but that's what it also builds a connection to the audience. Yeah. It looks familiar enough. We could not get into the later movies.
Yeah, and how brilliant was he to get the rights for like action figures and stuff like that?
Yeah,
as part of his pay.
Yeah,
so. I honestly can't see where that would have been. Any kind of precognition on his behalf?
No, just a hopeful thing.
Yeah, it was just blind, dumb, shithouse luck.
And yeah, he's made bajillions of dollars on that. Well, we're back to number two now. My number two movie, this is hard for me because I have two that are so close to me here. A movie we've already talked quite a bit about, Alien. Ridley Scott at his finest. I love this movie. I could watch it again and again.
Cool. Number two, The Abyss, we've already talked about.
Oh. No, just motoring along here.
Sure. Two, I have Clockwork Orange. Thankfully, fitting into 40 years, the last 40 years, I felt it. The reason it did so well was the use of classical music. The soundtrack was done by Wendy had a penis, so it was a guy. Wendy DeCarlos. Wendy Carlos was a guy.
Really?
Became a woman by the time Tron came out. But oh God, I'm gonna ramble on here. I felt that really kept the audience glued to the plot was by putting Beethoven's symphony in it. I know it was part of the story, but I felt it was a familiarity that we could adhere to while all the other stuff was going on. That was quite
a contrast to the
beautiful, brilliant violence.
Yeah.
Yes. There was a lot of anarchic stuff in it, and I thought the great marriage of music and film, and well, I mean, Star Wars was the same thing. You watch Star Wars without the soundtrack, you're just watching something totally different, and it could have become a very different movie.
Mm-hmm.
I think Clockwork Orange was the same thing. It was the only thing that we could sort of adhere to, because the dialogue was very different. It was forget the name of the type of language they were speaking, extremely violent for its time, even now, and a lot of what it touched upon it. But
Kubrick actually divorced himself from the film, I think, as much because of the audience that the film began to attract than anything else.
Yeah.
But it makes an impact. You don't watch this movie and walk away from it the same person.
Yes.
Getting down to my number one. Strangely enough, another Ridley Scott movie, Blade Runner. This movie changed how I watched movies. Like, it was, like I've said before in other episodes, this was the very first movie that I felt that I had to sneak into the theater to watch it. It was rated R.
You're going to sign another contract saying that if you tell the story again, I get to put a spike through your fucking head.
I know, it was worth it. It was worth it, man.
Going to talk about the movie, not sneaking into it, man. Why number one? Why? What makes Blade Runner better?
Harrison Ford, Rutger Hauer, Daryl Hannah, the chick with the cigarette. What's your name again?
Sean Young.
Yes, thank you. Keep on forgetting her name.
But Joanna Cassidy caught her.
Oh, yeah.
Edward James Olmos.
Oh, yeah, the guy with the origami, which actually got me into doing origami as well. Says, wow.
It's the movie made you its Rain Man, is what you're
doing. Yes, okay. Yes, that's it.
I'd say it's number 6 or number 7 on my list.
You know what? It was hard not to put it in mine. Yeah. It is. It's just, it's so influential, and it's such a feast for the eyes and your head. Yeah. And
it was such a complete world. That's what I really, that I had never gotten before this movie. Mm-hmm. Every other science fiction movie looked like it was shot on the back lot of the Universal Studios.
Yeah.
This one here was, it looked like a dirty city in the rain, and just the different languages and the people and the neon lights and everything. It was just, it was a fully, fully realized world, just like Fifth Element was. Alrighty then, your number one, sir.
Mine is Alien. Mm-hmm. I've droned on about this film in enough of the past podcasts, but I do. I love it. It's got, it is so it. I like the fusion of horror and science fiction, and I love the Giger aesthetic. I love everything about it. Period. Mm-hmm. Ow,
son of a bitch. See, I would really love to know more of the backstory before Alien. Like that great big huge pilot that's in the chair and how it landed there
with
all the eggs. Oh yeah.
Yeah. No, it's it definitely maybe the mystery of it all though is what made it fascinating. If we start learning things about it.
Yeah, it
might sort of
peel the onion a little too close. I know what you're saying. It starts demystifying it, and I think the sequels have done that to a certain degree as well too, right? Where maybe some of the sting is gone, especially in like Alien Resurrection, where the whole baby thing, when you start bringing that kind of element into it, or when you start pitting them against predators, it's sort of, it makes it less special.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like anal sex. It should only be sometimes, not all the time, where it's not special.
Well, the alien ship was number one for me was Brazil. Boy, I can watch this every few months and
really
find out more. It's such a deep movie, and the story was good.
The soundtrack was good.
The acting. There was many layers to all the characters. There was the set design, the costume design was just incredible. You cannot make movies that look like this now. It's just,
well, they almost couldn't then.
That's true, but he really used it. He used a lot of forced perspective and miniatures, and he used them in a way that you just don't find in film anymore. It's always the cop out of the computer nowadays, and his shots were just like, I really believed the city that he lived in. It was a great companion piece to 1984. And
I like Brazil, and I know Alan didn't really care for it that much, but
I mean, aesthetically, no, I didn't care for it. I mean, there were aspects of it that I thought were really cool. The angel dude. Mm-hmm. Was really, really neat. Yeah. The flying sequences and stuff like that were amazing. Mm-hmm. Catherine Hellman fucking cracked me up. I thought she was fucking hilarious in it. Yeah. But I didn't attach to the movie as a whole. I didn't care what this guy went through.
Yeah.
Right.
And see, I think we've already discussed all about that as well. It's like, you need to connect to people in the movie.
Yeah.
Like, a movie that a lot of people really, really, really liked was Kissed. It's that necrophilia movie. Couldn't stand it.
Loved it.
I couldn't connect with any of the characters in it at all.
Right.
And I walked out of it and I was like, "Ha, piece of crap." And I think it's the same with you with Brazil. You couldn't connect to anybody, right?
Mm-hmm. Well, what is the emotional core of Brazil then?
It's It's a love story.
Well, that's the that was the tag, wasn't it? Love Conquers All? Or the name of... there was a tagline, I think, for Brazil that said that.
That's actually an edit.
On the edit, yeah. But it was on the poster, too.
Yeah, because the American, or the proposed American release of it, yeah, had a happy ending.
It didn't get out that way, though, unfortunately. But it's... He took a movie and he basically didn't. He decided to not make a futuristic version of a current, so a mid '80s version of what the future would look like. He went back and said, "What would it look like if we did take somebody from the '30s and '40s and created a future?" We talked about retro future hours ago now, and he was brilliant with it. Like he took '30s '40s. Technology and it was almost like he went back in time and said, what would it look like if they took that technology and propelled it 50 years in the future? It was brilliant.
Which is kind of steampunk, and I love the steampunk aesthetic.
It was actually the origin of steampunk, wouldn't it?
I don't know, because I love steampunk, but I don't like the visual look of Brazil.
The thing with steampunk, though, is that it's more of a Victorian era brought forward, as opposed to like 30s, 40s,
an Art Deco type.
Yeah.
And before that, every movie. Correct me. We might have to do some homework, but I think every movie was always the director taking the story at that time in that era, and then looking at what it would look like 50 years from now. Nobody actually thought, what would it be like if we took earlier eras and looked at their vision of the future. I can't think of anything. Now it happens more often. You see League of Extraordinary Gentlemen or that's not really...
Even the remake of 1984 would sort of do that. Because they're imagining what Orwell thought the world would look like in 48, right?
Yeah.
Kind of, sort of. All right, excellent. Well, that's it. This is the end of our first kick at science fiction here. I would suppose that somewhere down the road we will revisit and go through some of the other stuff that we wanted to talk about in the science fiction department. Big thanks to Ross for coming out.
Thank you.
Participating in this. Excellent. And hopefully we'll be able to get you out here to do some more.
That'd be great. Thanks for having me on, and I look forward to working with you in the future.
Awesome.
Keep up the great work.
Yeah, all right. Feel free to leave comments at hermaphobia.blogspot.com.
Or email us at hermaphobia@gmail.com.
All right. Thanks for sitting through.
Thank you. Bye.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye. Magic, 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 magic.